Shall I tell you who's on, Marilyn?
Yes. Is Marilyn trying to get on?
Marilyn, we've got Tony, Laurence, Scott Hollenbeck, our visitor,
okay,
our guest, Thomas, Ken Stubbs, and yourself. Has somebody else just joined?
Yes, hi, this is Ruchika.
Hi, Ruchika, welcome.
Marilyn, might I make a suggestion? Tony Harris here. Have you gone to make your email, or are you still there?
This is Rom joining in.
Rom.
Oh.
Welcome.
While you're doing that, maybe we could have a brief discussion on this letter from Hans-Jürgen Garska. Stuart Lynn.
You mean?
Maybe somebody might like to make some comments on that.
Is that the EU letter that Thomas had originally researched and got formally sent out, or am I missing?
Not an EU letter, but I suppose we are talking about the one I got hold of in Berlin.
The International Working Group on Data Protection and Telecommunication?
Yes, that's the one. Yeah, this is the same letter that Thomas had previously provided to us and that we have reviewed and have up as a link on our, as part one of our contributions. But yes, do you want to have a brief discussion on that?
Oh, perhaps a couple of comments. I'm baffled because I don't know what their point is. Where they're saying extend the search capabilities of WHIS databases to searches for the registrant name. What are they talking about?
I think they may have meant by the registrant's name, using the registrant's name as a search key.
Oh, but that's there now. We're not extending it. Have we proposed to extend it in any way?
You can't, with usual WHOIS, you can't search domain names by registrant domain names.
Oh, okay.
That's what the concern is about. The thing, for instance, .org and .info will possibly, whatever, offer as part of the ex-WHOIS services in the future, things like that.
Okay, so you're talking about doing wildcard searches on various fields. Similar to what they can do with .biz right now. You could do a search to find all names owned by Thomas Rossler or something like that. Is that what
you can do in Dialog right now for common net name.
Right.
And how do they justify that? On which basis?
Well wait, guys. Hold on just a minute. First of all, we have better clarity on what the question was, but I think we still have a misunderstanding from both submissions, from the a miscommunication from both submissions from both the commission and from this group on what the status of that recommendation is on the part of the task force. The status on that recommendation on the part of the task force is that it is in an issues report. It is not a present recommendation for a policy change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Lawrence, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think that one of the things that we now better understand, and so let me address this before we go to our conversation with Scott. Scott, I apologize for this, but let me just do this. I think that based on what we better understand, I had a conversation with Tony this morning, and we both agree that we will need to do a letter of transmittal on the final report, which explains some of this, because it's clear that although most of us have been involved in actively participating in the work of the task force now for some time, there are some there've been some changes in representation, and people who have been reading the latest the version of the report that they're commenting on have then not been able to go on. That happens with the nature of how things move. They've not been able to go on and actually become fully informed of what the task force is recommending now versus what the task force has studied in the past. So I will be drafting a letter of transmittal which explains very clearly in the cover letter what the recommendations are, what the three issues reports will be, and defines clearly that the task force has discussed privacy and discussed uniformity and consistency of data elements and has made a decision to recommend further work on different priorities for the follow-on work beyond this initial recommendation, hoping that we will capture the confusion that exists right now on the part of some people about what the task force has discussed and what its recommendations have been, and that we would do that in a letter of transmittal. And I know we've had a couple of other folks join us, but I just wanted to get that clearly on the table because I think that would allow us to address sort of politically and professionally the comments that we've received from these two groups, but noting that the present recommendations don't actually call for what the two groups recommend. We have someone else join us.
This is Denise Michelle. I work with the At-Large Advisory Committee.
Thank you.
Hi,
welcome.
This is Steve Metallitz. I joined us.
Great. So let me just do this again real quick before we go to Scott. We have Ruchika on behalf of the non-commercial constituency. We have Glenn as our secretariat. We have Lorenz for ITC, yes, and Steve for ITC, the intellectual property constituency. We have Tony Harris for the ISPs. We have Ram Mohan for the registries. We have Ken Stubbs for the registrars. And we have Thomas representing the former GA. And we have Denise Michelle as liaison to the at-large. I'm missing, I think, right now, Christy, is that right? I think Christy is planning to join us, and I have not heard from anyone else. Glenn,
she is planning to join us, Marilyn. She's going to be joining us in another 15 minutes or so.
Great. Glenn, that completes the roll call with myself added to it on behalf of the business constituency. And what I'd like to do now, so that we can make the most effective use of Scott's time, is to turn this over to Ram and have you introduce Scott, Ram, and then if we could spend like the next 30 minutes dialoguing about the particular set of discussions and questions that the group has related to the standards issues and privacy, et cetera, that the work that's going on in PROVREG, is it PROVREG, Ram, or also Chris?
It is PROVREG specifically that I think we're talking about, not CRIS, because
okay.
This is really in the future. PROVREG is happening as we speak.
Terrific. And Scott, thank you very much for joining us. And let me turn this over. Ram will introduce you, and then we will hear from you, and then have a bit of a Q&A if that's okay with you.
Sure. Thank you.
Scott, thanks for making it to the call. Appreciate spending the time. For the task force members, Scott Hollenbeck works with VeriSign Registry Services, and he is the principal author for the EPP protocol. And if you go to the IETF list, you'll find that Scott's a frequent and learned participant on multiple lists. But specifically in the EPP protocol, which is certainly reaching the status now of being the protocol that all domain name registries are moving towards. So with that introduction, Scott, you're on.
Okay. Now, Ram, you didn't give me a lot of guidance on what you wanted me to say.
Okay. Let me do that for a moment here. The reason why we invited you, Scott, was because The task force is considering the issue of privacy as it interacts with the who is. And in prior conversations with the task force, I had briefed the task force saying that privacy is larger than who is, and privacy is making its the request for specific things about privacy in various arenas. And I had briefed the group very, very short manner about the current debate that's happening inside of PROVREG, where the IESG is asking for privacy attributes to be made mandatory and to be made required as part of the basic EPP protocol. And some of the pros and cons and some of the pushback, frankly, that's happening from the working group members who are saying that, you know, the protocol as defined today has the ability to incorporate privacy without necessarily making it mandatory. So that's the preamble, and that's the background that the group has. But I think the reason why we wanted to have you on here was to brief the group a little bit more in detail about both what the working group members are saying as well as what the IESG is saying, and to get a little bit provide a little bit of context in that area, and then also to just, you know, answer questions from the working group.
Okay, sure. Well, let me start with a little history lesson to provide some background information for where we are today. Privacy came up as an issue very early in the requirements effort. We knew right away that we had to have some kind of features in the protocol to deal with privacy. Privacy meaning protection of data that you know, was being exchanged from some originator to be stored in a repository. And by repository here, we're traditionally thinking about registries. One of the very early debates
Scott,
we had, though, yes.
Scott, can I? It's Marilyn. I won't interrupt you again, but I need to ask you a clarifying question up front,
sure.
If you could. Very often in the development environment and in the management of data, the concept of privacy versus security of the data is easily misunderstood.
I agree with that.
Can you, as you talk through this with us, can you distinguish for us when it's appropriate, when a concern is about security of the data versus the rules of privacy that relate to the data, if that's appropriate to do?
Sure. What do you mean by security? I mean, it's very, very wide.
Security of the data in this particular instance, Thomas, and pretty kind of well thought out and understood in the privacy area, is that if I have data that I'm holding and the data that it's my responsibility to secure it from unauthorized access.
Okay, so we are talking about unauthorized disclosure versus disclosure authorized by the operator of the database.
I want to understand in the development of the protocol where the dialogue about privacy is specific to privacy of the content versus securing the data so that it can't be misdirected or hacked into, et cetera. And therefore, and I don't know if it's appropriate to this discussion, Scott, but if it is appropriate, could you just address it too?
Sure. And I should say that really what we're talking about is privacy in the context of disclosure. All right? We already have features in the protocol to provide the confidentiality security service. All right?
Okay.
This is encryption. Any all data exchanged between the parties is encrypted, you know, to deal with eavesdropping types of attacks.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not specifically what the bone of contention has been. It's always been the issue of disclosure and authority to disclose.
Okay.
All right. So let's go back then to the first place where this started to raise it to become an issue with the working group. We actually had two different camps of people pushing two different opinions on where and how some mechanism should be deployed in the protocol. One camp was suggesting that we had to have some kind of a feature that was being pushed from the client side. So, for example, a registrant would say, I'll give you permission to disclose this information in this way, or I do not give you permission to disclose it in that way. So, for example, a client could say, you can use my data for your own research purposes, but you cannot publish it in WHOIS. That was one position. The other position, which was derived largely from the work being done by the World Wide Web Consortium's Platform for Privacy Preferences Working Group, that's P3P, if you're familiar with the acronym, takes a more server-centric approach, whereas somewhere someone develops a privacy policy for the repository, and that policy is then expressed in a parsable mechanical way. Okay, and then that policy is published in an initial exchange between client and server. So, for example, the server may say, well, this is what I do with all data that you give to me. And the things that the server can say, for example, are, I disclose it to third parties, I'll sell it to people, I will use it to contact you for marketing purposes, etc. And the onus is then on the downstream users of the data to decide if they wish to put information in the repository in accordance with the policy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're being told up front, this is what I do, and you either agree to it or not. And if you don't agree to it, you don't provision any data in the repository. So those were the two positions that we had. The proponents of the first position never were able to come up with a coherent proposal to describe how that those features could be added to the protocol. The proponents of the second position did. So what we have in the protocol right now is an optional mechanism for the server to announce its privacy policy to the downstream operators. Okay, that's been there now for, you know, a year, perhaps going on 2 years, and the working group approved the drafts with that concept in mind. When the IESG reviewed the documents, the one outstanding comment that we've been unable to address came back along the lines of, why don't you allow tagging of each element, such as a telephone number, to indicate if it should be disclosed to third parties or not? And when the IESG came back with that comment, that simply reopened all of the debates we'd had 2 years ago around the lines of, well, is it something the client should be pushing or something the server should be announcing? And if it's the former, how do we actually mark the data in such a way that, you know, one, it's universally usable, because ultimately that's the IESG's concern, is doing something that's mandatory to implement such that you guarantee interoperability.
Yeah.
Right? And two, everyone has to agree that this is a usable mechanism. The problem that we've continued to have in the working group is that the IESG's position has not been seen as something that's universally usable by everybody. And so we've had this...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
The breadth of discussion, this sounds to me like at both the working group and at the ISG, and this is Marilyn asking the question, sorry, that this is a discussion about all data going into who is, and that it isn't restricted to all data from individuals versus all data from corporations. Is that right?
That's correct.
From
a protocol perspective, we do not want to get into interpreting, you know, where the data came from or what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because that's a policy mechanism.
Right. So when the working group has in looking at this, and I work for AT&T. I don't know if you know that. So I actually am pretty familiar with PCP. And I don't know if others on the call are or not.
No. Perhaps you should assume no.
Well, I think Scott's description of this is a pretty fair one. I mean, it basically is a standard that allows the individual, the goal is to allow the individual to set a privacy preference within their own client or within services that are, that they choose to subscribe to, and then instead of having to website by website make an individual decision, the technology supports the preference of the individual, but it also, most instantiations of P3P allow an override by the individual based on their choice. So if your system is denying you access to websites who have privacy policies that you don't like and don't agree with, but you decide you want to travel internationally and you want to go to a website for purposes of finding out discounted travel, and in that case you're asked to disclose personally identifiable information you normally don't, you could decide to bypass the restriction in this particular instance and give what we would consider informed consent.
If I may follow up with a question, and I think it mostly goes to Scott, I have a question about the P3P-centric approach. The way you and Marilyn described it, it's an approach by which you basically can accept or can't accept a certain policy. Does P3P permit a server, so to speak, to express ranges, like I can publish the telephone number or I can't, and doesn't permit the client to say, okay, I'm using the choice you're giving me and I opt not to have the telephone number published, but please go ahead with the other element. Would there be a way for this kind of automated negotiation with the P3P-centric approach you have been discussing?
Well, the P3P itself doesn't have any negotiation capabilities in it. There is another body of work called APPEL, or APPEL, which are it's a W3C attempt to put some negotiation capabilities on the client side. All right, and we within Prograde we've decided not to look at that because it's very bulky and very cumbersome, and it's also a very immature work at this point.
Yeah. Okay, so with the P3P approach, all you could do is transmit policy to clients and have them accept it or not, which would usually mean accept it.
No. Now, as Marilyn said, there's an informed consent facet to this.
The informed consent happens on the business process side, if I may put it like that, because after all, EPP is not a protocol spoken by registrants themselves, but by registrars when they
not spoken by registrants, but the information is certainly displayed to them, with the registrar being the middleman.
Yes. The point I was going for is really the question, what kind of flexibility does it allow to make case-by-case decisions, and I think the answer is none, right?
No. Thomas, I think the better question for Scott is, what kind of flexibility is provided in the protocol for the implementation by the registrar that could support a easy case-by-case decision by the registrant? But because, you know, we all know that standards are all about how they actually are implemented and supported by whoever's implementing them.
And in that case, the protocol gives the registrar the flexibility to take the policy and express it in human understandable terms. Of course, there's quite a range of ability to express different policies. No registry may adopt a single policy. There may be multiple ways they deal with different types of data. But to some extent, what Thomas was suggesting is, you know, once the policy is explained to the registrant, the registrant ultimately has to look at this and say, do I agree with it or not?
I have another question then about the P3P-centric approach. Does it, with what kind of granularity are you expressing this policy? Is it everything you transmit will be subject to this policy, or are you transmitting policies by data, by object class, something like contact and registrant, this kind of policy will be applied for admin C and this kind of policy will be applied by registrant, or do you go down to the data element level? How do you do that?
It's done at the macro level, not at the object level.
Macro level. So it's really your registration will be handled according to this policy. Period.
That's correct. Yes, your registration of domains, contacts, or hosts.
Okay.
And, you know, so there is no granularity below the macro level.
Understood. Thanks.
But, Scott, back up to the question then. Can we sort of ask, for instance, if I'm a corporation and I have a sysadmin and an administrator and then the holder of a domain name, my assumption would be that all of that contact information would be available in WHOIS.
Mm-hmm.
My assumption might be that as an individual registrant who's chosen to register a name, that my name, and I'm just going to kind of walk through this as an example. So Marilyn Cade has registered PSWG.net. And the administrator and the billing contact, the sysadmin and the technical and the billing contact, are both the ISP that I do business with and who's hosting my domain name. So they appear in the Whois database. The only personally individually identifiable information is about me, that I'm the registrant, and my home address and my email and my home telephone number. Is it possible in the protocol to make a decision that would limit access to my home address, my home telephone number, and my email, but still provide something like my email and the technical the technical contact and billing contact?
Yes, but it's an either-or situation ultimately. If the registry's policy is that individual information, you know, will be subject to different privacy features than, you know, the corporate information, then that facility would be available. And so, for example, if ICANN were to adopt a policy, you know, a Whois-like policy that says, you know, technical information will be published, but personal registrant information will not, the registry can express that policy, you know, using the elements that are in the protocol right now, and that information can be passed, you know, from registry to registrar to registrant, you know, all the way, you know, through all the downstream channels. But that's how it's displayed. I mean, it's explained as this is a policy and not as a situation of you as registrant have a choice.
Right. So it would be a class-wide policy.
That's
very helpful, I think, for all of us to understand. So if the way it's presently instantiated, a registry could adopt a policy which provides a class-wide capability for individuals that varied from what it provided to corporations or nonprofit organizations, for instance.
Yes.
Okay.
How's that? I just don't get it. I'm sorry.
It will have a different policy for the business as opposed to the individual registrant.
How do you need... I mean...
the registry has to generate their policies based on different types of registrants, yeah.
Generate the policy and pass it on to the registrant. If that kind of policy is supposed to differentiate by class of registrant, then I need some way in the protocol to express this registrant is of the following class, please base your policy on that.
Right.
Otherwise, I have a problem. Is that capability included in the protocol in the draft on that P3P-centric approach?
The protocol already has provisions to identify organizational individual contact.
I'm not sure if we are talking about the same thing. What do you mean by to identify? I'm talking about identifying some class of registrant and mapping it to the class of policy which is offered back.
Thomas?
That's the thing Marilyn seemed to ask for.
Yeah. Thomas, I'm going to do a cue right after you. Are you online right now?
I'm
going to do a cue after Thomas's question.
Yeah,
I
asked to be in the queue, please.
Great. So Thomas's question relates to trying to clarify whether I was asking the question I was asking. Right, Thomas?
Was a clarification on your question, and was a question on whether or not that would implement it, because what you described sounded like some kind of a negotiation to me, and I think we heard before that there is no negotiation.
But we all have a very open mind in the questions we're asking, right?
Just trying to understand the protocol, Marilyn.
I'm wearing
my techie hat here.
Yeah, I understand, but I want to be sure that we're all approaching this with a very open mind. So let me be sure that the question I asked is that what you wanted to do was ask a follow-up to my question, or maybe you had a different question. My question was whether a registry could establish, when I said class-wide, I meant a category. Maybe that would be a better term for me to use. So a category of registrant who has identified themselves as an individual versus a category of registrant who's identified themselves as a business or a nonprofit organization. And so my question was, could there be different a different policy about the personally identifiable information of an individual as categories? That it's a class. It's not each individual, but it's anyone who fits in that class. And I understood the answer that Scott gave us to be, if the registry had a policy that was separate for individuals and distinct, then yes. And then...
Correct. That's what I said.
Okay. Then Thomas had a question which I didn't quite understand either, so I'm going to ask him to restate his question, and then I'm going to go to Ken and anyone else who has a question.
Scott, my question was I was basically confused on how this is going to happen. My question was, maybe it's really just a little clarification. So if I understand where we are correctly, the protocol as you have designed it so far goes roughly like this. Registrar to registry, hello, I have a registration, it's class X, it's class individual, class non-commercial, class business. From
okay, now there is no distinction between business or non-commercial, though. All right,
I don't care about the individual elements, but there is some kind of distinction.
Well, let me be clear about that. There is a distinction between individual and organizational elements, okay? And organizational can be, you know, business, nonprofit, whatever else you want to call it.
Is this an attribute for the entire registration on the macro level, or are you talking about data elements like organization name?
Yeah, organization name.
Okay, so you don't have a way to say this registration is for an individual, and to have the registry offer according to that.
Yes, you do, because if the registrant is an individual contact, not an organizational contact, and that contact is associated with a domain name registration, the assumption is that there's an individual and not an organization that's registering the name.
You have different classes for the contact objects.
Yes, but there's nothing on the domain object that says this thing is registered by an organization or it's registered by an individual. It's the association with the contact that makes that distinction.
Uh-huh. So, I have a little problem with the order in which steps occur. So, basically, the policy which is offered by the registry would depend on the kind of, on the classes of the object the registrar sends.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
Sorry, once again. So in order to implement what Marilyn suggested on a very high level, the privacy policy which is offered by the registry through the registrar to the registrant would depend on the kinds of data objects which are submitted, or it would express a organizational object will be treated like this and an individual object will be treated like this.
That's possible.
Okay, thanks. I think I understand that now. Sorry for asking so many questions.
Not a problem.
I heard Ken with a question.
Yeah. You want me to go ahead, Marilyn?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know whether you were trying to build a queue or not.
I haven't heard anyone else, but we'll build a queue after you if there's anyone else.
Yeah, I've got a series of questions, all of which will either reflect my ignorance or be easily answered. First of all, Scott, is there any current application that you see out there in CCs possibly that is somewhat close to where you are or where they are at this point in time in the development of this process? I believe there are certain country codes that do differentiate between the registrant's status, either as an individual or non-individual. Have you seen that out there?
No, but I'm not that familiar with what a lot of the country code PLDs are doing.
Yeah, I could have sworn that DENIC had categories of registrations. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, that might be true, Ken. The one thing I've seen that's specific to the privacy discussion is some work that's being done in Poland right now.
Right.
They are actually adding an extension to the protocol, and this is another feature that's a standard part of the protocol, the ability to add extensions.
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. In CORE, we had talked about setting up a system whereby at the time of registration, and I'm taking this off of a technical course and trying to put it into a process I understand a little bit more.
Sure.
So if I'm going out of line, Marilyn, just shut me up.
No, go ahead.
Basically, what would happen is at the time that you register a domain, you would be given the opportunity to make a ratification that the domain was, in fact, either a individual registrant or non-individual. And that's how they differentiated it. They didn't get into what type of organization. It was just individual or non-individual. If it was an individual, then you were given a specific registration agreement that, in effect, would, I know I'm getting into policy, Scott, and not code, but in effect, you would be given a registration agreement that, in effect, required, again, a reaffirmation of that on penalty if this wasn't, in fact, an individual registration, that the domain could be canceled by either the registrar or, in this case, the registry.
Sure.
If, in fact, it was an individual registration, then you were presented with fields that needed to be completed that did not necessarily include data fields that would have been required for a more open disclosure situation. Is this somewhat contemplated in the process that you guys are talking about, or are you leaving the architecture open-ended enough so that this could be placed into a process that you're building?
Yes and yes. Meaning, yes, it's been contemplated, and yes, a lot of the data fields, you know, that get down into some more personal data, like phone numbers and email addresses,
right,
they can be optional.
Right.
And there are circumstances where it may make sense that they not be provided at all.
Right. And the theory behind that, at least I'm giving you the CORE theory because there is an intellectual property side of interest here. The theory behind that basically was if it was deemed not to be an individual site, if the use was deemed not to be individual, the domain could be shut down almost arbitrarily. There was not a map. You didn't have to go through a large process to determine anything or give them a chance to straighten something out. You made a commitment at the time you registered the domain that was being used for a purpose, it was just a matter of determining whether that purpose was the case. By doing that, you did not have to ask for information beyond that point. You know?
Right, and I don't believe there's anything in the protocol now that would preclude that mode of operation.
Okay. Thank you. I know it's a broad policy implication, but if a protocol is designed that's so tight that you can't create meaningful policy that gives some flexibility to it, then it's not going to be much use too far down the road. That's all.
Understand.
Scott, I have a couple other questions, but let me ask if anyone else wants to ask questions at this point.
Good morning, Marilyn. It's Christy McKee. I joined the call late.
Hi,
I don't have a question, but good morning.
Good morning.
What you're talking about?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Scott to address two questions, two items further, or two areas further, maybe. First of all, Scott, would you talk a little bit more about the concept of extensions and what kind of flexibility that provides in providing further ways to deal with the issue of privacy? And then would you also go back and talk a little bit more about the ISG's questions about why don't you allow tagging of each element to indicate preference?
Sure. Extensions. One of the core design goals going into developing the protocol was that it'd be possible to add features to the protocol without having to go back and change the protocol itself. Those of you who are familiar with the way the IETF works probably understand that you know, once an RFC is published, you really don't change it. You have to either update it or obsolete it, and that takes a lot of time. It's also not very easy to add new features to a protocol where, in an operating environment where policy tends to vary greatly. If you think of the domain name registration world, every country code TLD probably has something a little bit different about the way they work, you know, as compared to the GTLD registries.
It's also very expensive.
Yep. Yep. So we decided early on that we had to have a means in the protocol where we provided hooks that implementers could add new features without having to go back and change the core protocol itself. There are some features in XML, and for those of you who didn't know, ETP is defined and specified using XML, the extensible markup language. But XML provides features where you can essentially jump from one, the concept is called the namespace in XML, but you can jump from one namespace to another, and you can do that seamlessly. All it takes is the designer of the extension to come up with a new specification for what they want to do, and they attach that to the hooks that are in the current protocol. Now, where we've seen this in use so far, as I said before, the Polish registry has added some features for privacy and for domain reservation. They allow people to reserve a name without actually registering it, or they call it booking a domain. I believe the folks in Australia have done similar kinds of things with extensions for .au. I know that VeriSign has used the extension mechanism to add some different fields for some of the new products that they're doing, like keyword products that actually, you know, that got launched and was killed a while back. Rom, you might be able to mention if you know the folks in .info or .org are doing anything with extensions.
We're contemplating it. It's still early days yet, but there is clear, especially on the PIR end, they're certainly thinking of on the policy area to figure out how to introduce these elements without modifying the base protocol.
Yeah. Now, there's two efforts underway within the IETF context that I'm also involved in that are extension related. One of them was ENUM. And, you know, ENUM is a telephone number to domain name mapping. The other is DNS security. Both of the internet drafts that I have out there for both of these topics essentially add some new features to the existing domain mapping. And the idea being, again, we don't have to replicate all the domain work, but we can simply build upon it by using this extension mechanism. Okay, so that's the extension topic. Now, getting back to the IESG effort and the IESG comment.
Yeah, Scott, before you leave that, so extensions, in essence, we could think of as adding in some of the flexibility that, and I guess that's what I'd like for you to address, and you can do that in whatever order you want to. What kind of flexibilities do you view extensions giving into and are we going to find a situation, as we did with the implementation that .new.net initially did, when they used extensions that that conflicted with other other extensions that were being used by the sort of run-of-the-mill ISP? What kind
right.
of standardization issues do the extensions present? Or what kind of interoperability issues?
Well, one of the first places we thought the extensions would be extremely useful were to address the privacy topic.
Uh-huh.
And the working group very early on said, look, we aren't going to be able to come up with a standard mechanism to deal with privacy that everyone is going to agree to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to allow the individual registry operators to define their own extensions that made sense in their own local context, deal with you know, legal issues or policy issues or whatever, you know, was driving them to make the decisions they had to make.
Mm-hmm.
The other areas were for things like DNS security, ENUM, other IETF efforts building upon domain names.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of conflict, if someone were to come up and define a domain extension that had, for example, some kind of a built-in conflict with the domain mapping itself, that would be a bad thing. But the idea is that you build on the existing mappings instead of trying to change them, right? And that should help to keep extensions working well together.
Speaking from a dot info perspective, I completely agree with that approach, because that allows us to standardize on a version of VPP that that is a standard that not only us but all the registrars, all the customers who use this protocol, they know it's going to be the standard. The base is not going to change, and extensions will depend on jurisdiction and on particular local needs that may be required.
All right. Now I should say extensions are actually negotiated between the client and the server. When a client first contacts a server, the server actually publishes a list of all of the extensions that it has available. In some cases, the client may pick from those that it wishes to use, assuming that the extensions are optional. If the server requires the extensions be used, should the client not select them, the server can then deny a connection attempt and say, look, if you don't use these extensions, I'm not going to provide you with service.
Mm, okay.
Okay, does that cover that topic adequately?
We'll see. It was very helpful, but I may still have a question about it. Why don't we go on to the IFG's question.
Okay.
Why don't you allow tagging?
Right, yeah, the IEFG's comment still ultimately boiled down to putting some kind of a tag on every single element that would indicate whether or not the data originator was giving permission to the server operator to disclose it to unauthorized third parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we would have to add some kind of a tag to the email address, something to the street address, something to the telephone number, to the fax
mm-hmm.
number, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And where this got a little bit ugly from the working group's perspective is they also wanted us to add it, for example, to the domain name, to the name servers, to the IP addresses associated with the name servers. And it started getting a little ugly from our perspective, because what does it mean when you're trying to register a domain name but you're saying you can't disclose the IP address?
Scott, may I ask, did they explicitly talk about these data elements, or did they just say add something to everything?
Well, no, they originally said add something to everything, and then when we came back and said, well, that means IP addresses and all these other bits and pieces needed to make the DNS work in addition to the personal elements, they said, well, that's fine. If that's what it means, that's what it means. From a technical perspective, it's better to do it all, because as soon as you start trying to pick and choose, you're getting into policy decisions. And the IETF is going to try to stay away from policy.
So a server, the registry could just say transaction denied when someone comes along and wants to keep the name server secret, basically. That would be their approach in this case.
Right. Well, there's two things. The registry could say, well, you've told me keep the name server private. I'm not going to do that. So it could simply send back an error that says, I am not going to provision this data with the stipulation that you've made. Or, and this is likely as well, the registry in their policy, that data collection policy we talked about, the P3P thing,
mm-hmm.
if their policy is, I disclose IP addresses for DNS resolution, but if you come back and say don't do it, I'm going to do it anyway. Because just simply the fact that you are giving me the information means that you are agreeing to the policy that I told you about up front. Now, I think we all understand where there can be a lot of confusion in that context. So this is one of the reasons that the working group has not been overly pleased with that suggestion from the IETF, and it's been a source of controversy.
So you've basically been in the business of deciding what gets precedence, individual tags or some policy extension. Okay, ugly.
Can I ask a question about? It sounds to me, Scott, like there is another possible problem with the IESG approach. And that is that today you know what the standard data elements are that are presently collected, right? So in theory, you might be able to tag all of them.
Well, that's correct. We can tag all of the elements that are in the mappings right now.
Mm-hmm. There could be an environment where, and I'm just struggling with what that might be, but perhaps in multilingual names or in...
Well, here's one. Here's one, an extension.
Uh-huh.
A registry comes up with an extension, and they don't tag the elements.
Right.
Now, the registry may say, well, that's fine. Our policy is not to do it. But from an interoperability perspective, this is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And other people may have more questions about this. I have a further question about the P3P interaction, but let me turn to Machika.
Sure. Do you have a question for me, or are you suggesting that I ask my questions?
I'm just going around the group to make sure that people had a chance to ask Scott any questions.
Yeah, I actually have two questions, Scott.
Sure.
Can you give us more history about this, how the P3P-centric view entered the debate as an option?
Okay. Yeah, that's easy. We had a fellow that was involved with the effort from the W3C, and he also happened to be working within the IETF's working group that's doing the protocol development effort, and he thought it was an appropriate thing for us to consider.
Do you have, can you point us to a posting on the IETF archive? Did that fellow post anything about it, the idea, and more discussion about it?
Well, if you want to follow the discussion, the PROVREG working group has mail list archives that are up and visible.
Okay.
Okay, what you'd want to probably do, the URL is http, www.cafax.se.
Scott, I think the address is up on the has been sent out to the group.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. And what is the name of that fellow? So I know what to search for.
I'm sorry. The name of the what?
The fellow who suggested P3P.
His name. The primary proponent was an individual named Eric Brunner Williams.
Okay. And my second question is, so what's the status of EPP now? Are you still going to go forward with it without having resolved whether you're going to go with the privacy tag or individual tags or a P3P approach?
Well, we can't, right?
Right.
The way the IETF works is the IESG is the gatekeeper. They have to approve the documents before they're sent to the RFC editor for publication. 2 weeks ago or so, I published updated documents that addressed all of the IESG comments with the exception of this one privacy comment. So right now, our working group chair and a couple of individuals like myself are in active negotiations with the IESG trying to see if there's some kind of a compromise position we can agree upon. What they have suggested is that if the data collection policy, the P3P-like things, could be explained a little bit better, that might be a way forward. But we aren't completely in agreement yet.
So how is this going to affect the timeline?
Oh, yes, of course. We should have been done quite some time ago.
And so
we need to get agreement on this issue before we can move forward.
So can you predict when EPP may be adopted? Will it still happen this year?
This year, I certainly hope so. It's February, right? I hope that we have this done and nailed before the March IETF meeting. It's dragged on for quite some time already, and this privacy topic is one that the working group has been over more than once. And this is why the IESG is not getting the working group to cave and change the way that they're thinking, because we've talked about it before. We already have consensus on what we think the right position is.
And that would be the server-centric view with P3P.
Yeah, that's right. That's what's in the documents right now. Now, the one compromise that the working group might be able to push, to give, is that the P3P elements are currently optional in EPP. Okay? A server operator doesn't have to publish them if they don't want to. Now, it may be that we agree that, okay, we'll make them mandatory, and so that they have to be published all the time. And if the IESG agrees to that, we might have found our way forward.
Right. So which side is the ISCG on, the mandatory or the optional side? Sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Which side is the ISCG on? Do they want mandatory P3P or optional P3P?
What the IESG wants is a mandatory to implement mechanism, and they really don't care what the mechanism is.
Okay.
So that's why I think that if we offer this up as we'll change it from optional to mandatory, and we make sure that we address any explanatory concerns that they have, this might be a viable way forward.
Okay.
I think the fact that it's optional right now is probably an issue for them.
Okay. Richard, do you have anything else?
No, that was all. Thanks, Mary.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, who? Lauren?
No, I have no specific questions.
Tony?
No, I've got nothing right now.
Okay. Christy?
It all sounds good to me.
Steve?
I just have one question about the last part of this discussion. When you say it would be mandatory to publish the P3P information, that would not mandate what a particular policy would be. It would just they would be mandated to publish what their policy is. Is that a fair way of putting it?
That's a completely accurate way of putting it.
Okay.
Now, what that means, though, ultimately, is that someone still has to come up with what these policies are.
Right.
And this is a place where ICANN plays a significant role, because the policies that the GTLD registries all operate under are essentially, you know, negotiated with ICANN.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Rom?
I don't have anything else to add. Scott, thanks for making the time and coming over.
Not a problem.
Let me see if Ken or Thomas have anything, and Michelle. Ken?
No, I'm fine. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. One more question. Is it possible to find out when the next working group is meeting and attend that meeting, or is it only to... current participants?
Oh, no. The ICF is open to anybody. The next face-to-face meeting will be taking place in San Francisco during the week of March 16th.
Okay.
So I do not believe a date and time has been selected for it yet.
But it would be on the site. Would it not be for the San Francisco meeting?
Yes. And we are definitely planning on meeting, because we have got to get this issue closed.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
Marilyn, can I ask another question? This is Rutiga.
Sure, but hold on just a minute. I just want to finish the queue. Thomas?
Well, just thanks to Scott for answering all my dumb questions. I think I've got your point now.
No such thing as a dumb question.
Denise?
No, thanks. This has been very informative.
And Rutiga?
Thanks. Scott, have you seen the criticisms of P3P by privacy advocates? And I was wondering, in context of those criticisms, how IETF would respond.
Well, I think one of the things that we did is we didn't adopt P3P, you know, lock, stock, and barrel. And in fact, what I would say is that what we've adopted is P3P-like as opposed to P3P. We took the concept of, you know, the server or, you know, the data collector announcing its policy, and we tailored it specifically to the environment that we're targeting here, you know, the domain registration environment. So that's why I would respond to any criticism.
Ritchie, I have a question for you. What's CDT's position on P3P?
I think CDT supports it.
And so when you're referencing privacy advocates' criticisms, what are they?
That you mean which groups in particular?
That would be helpful, but also...
Well,
what
Epic, for example, and basically the question of genuine choice, right? P3P is supposedly a notice and choice mechanism, and we kind of... Thomas was hinting at this discussion much earlier where what choice does a registrant really have left with if a registry has set out certain policies in advance? You know, it's important to be aware that P3P is... It does not implement a negotiating mechanism right now. It's a protocol that just basically says, go ahead and express your privacy policy through a standardized mechanism such as XML. And so this is the question that Thomas was getting at earlier, which is a very good question, is, well, where does that leave the registrant as far as choice is concerned?
But I think, again, the important thing is to focus on that standards get implemented under different policies. This is a mechanism to instantiate the ability to recognize a policy. And so it's important to make that distinction. For instance, it sounds to me like, and I'm just being hypothetical here, but it sounds to me like a registry, for instance, if a registrant chose to use a third-party service to provide their registration, that would not in any way interfere with this particular implementation, but the registrant would still have the ability to be an anonymous registrant, but the protocol would be recognizing the information of who the third party was and returning that information.
Marilyn, maybe I can just give an example of the things I have been thinking about earlier. Think about, just imagine for a moment you have a Whois environment where you have public access and some kind of privileged access. And you may have a general policy to say individuals' home phone numbers are not included with public access, but are included with privileged access. It could be interesting and helpful to have a way in the protocol to give individuals the opportunity to express, hey, it's fine to publish my home phone number in the public one. Or if you have the default the other way around, if you say home phone numbers are published by default, that you could still give the individual an opportunity to say, please don't include my home phone number with the public service. You can't do that when you are going for class-wide policies. That's the basic question. Is class-wide policies sufficient or isn't it?
And Thomas, I should say that the other facet to doing this mandatory to implement thing is that the possibility of defining a Whois specific extension is always there.
Yeah.
If someone comes up with a policy, right, that says that, you know, do we have to provide the ability for registrants to make that kind of choice, defining syntax for it in an extension is a very easy task.
Understood. The point was just it's not possible with a P3P-like approach.
Scott.
Exactly.
But Scott, let's explore that just a little bit further, because I think that's the thing that's very much on the minds of the task force. And let's just take as an example, let's take the example that Thomas gave and suggest that, for instance, if it were determined that accurate Whois data is required in the Whois, but there's a public there's a category of data which is publicly available, and then a category of data which is available via either a subscription, or Thomas was referring to it as privileged access, but
come in subscription.
So what I think you just said is it would be possible to create a Whois-specific extension and to then address the question of whether that data should be displayed or not, or certain kinds of data should be displayed or not.
Yes, completely possible.
And according to its category also, right?
Right.
So we went as far as we can go, as far as we feel the public needs us to go with policy, because the technology is going to enable us to do so as long as we are reasonable, correct?
That's completely correct.
Perfect. Christy, sorry.
So it sounds to me like that something of more of interest and a positive and constructive contribution by the task force would be to think about that particular aspect rather than focusing on what the present form doesn't do, but what would be possible through a Whois specific extension.
I would agree with that.
This has been very helpful, and thank you very much for your time. Does anyone have any do you have any comments on my last proposal?
Can I ask one more question, Marilyn, before Scott goes off?
Sure.
This is Ruchika. This is an EPP question. When we finally move towards EPP, what is the plan? I mean, will the registrars migrate their data to registries? Will it all be one centralized database?
Are you talking specifically about VeriSign's plans?
I'll think.
For example, yeah, I mean, as much VeriSign's or Afilius's, anyone's plan, and I guess Ron
well,
probably
I mean, Ron, you can certainly talk about .org now since you're actually looking at this very issue. But all, as far as VeriSign and ComNet are concerned, all I can say is that it's something that, you know, we're considering. And, you know, there will likely be, you know, lots of discussion in the future about does it make sense to pull that information, you know, to make those registries a thick registry again, or does it make more sense to keep it thin? We aren't going to decide that unilaterally.
It's a similar approach that PIR is taking for org. In fact, PIR has a policy council, and they have publicly committed to engage in some discussions, and in actually a lot of discussions before they figure out where to go next. Now, in the contract that PIR signed with ICANN, they've detailed at least one service that seems to be focused on the privacy of data elements issue. There is a feature that they've proposed called Org Cloak that allows registrants or organizations the ability to ask that you know, parts of their information be cloaked. But further details are, you know, haven't been decided yet. It's clearly in the area of policy.
What appendix is that?
It's Appendix G.
Thanks.
And so that's a proposal, but hasn't yet been accepted by ICANN?
No, no, no. It's actually something that PIR needs to propose first. PIR has said that that's a possible service that they may offer.
I see.
And so it's been defined in very broad terms. However, interacting with folks at PIR, the sense I get is that it's got legs, and it's something that's in serious consideration. But you know, keep in mind that PIR is a young company. They're going to announce the formation of their policy council shortly in a few weeks' time, and it's certainly going to be one of the topics that the policy council is going to look at. The PIR board, you know, has pretty strong privacy advocates. There are at least one or two very strong privacy advocates in the board. And PIR itself, you know, in its own tradition, given that its parent organization is ISOC, has a strong tradition of you know, open standards as well as internationally, following what's happening internationally, and has consistently, I think, been a supporter of privacy.
Terrific. Scott, thank you very much. I'm sure all of us greatly appreciate your time. Can we impose upon you to provide further feedback to us after the March meeting? Is that possible? We could invite you back again after that time?
Oh, that'd be great.
Again, I'm sure we all want to express our appreciation to you, and then we are going to go on with other work that is quite pressing. But this has been extremely helpful and informative to us, I think, in the next discussions that we need to have.
Okay, and I should say that I can be reached offline. I mean, we'll office call at any time via phone or email. Just look me up online.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let me see who we still have on the call, because I know Ken was going to have to drop off. Ken, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm going to be here for probably another 10 or 15 minutes,
okay.
Marilyn.
Okay, then we'll try to do administrative stuff while you're on the phone. Has Becky Burr joined us? Not yet.
I think that was just me coming off mute.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. I want to call everyone's attention, in case you haven't had a chance to look at it, to submissions that were received on the comments list. They were posted on the 18th, but they came in on the 17th to Glenn before close of business U.S. time. So except for Jeff Williams' comment, which did come in on the 18th, I see. But I think for the most part, the comments that were received posted on the 18th were actually received on the 17th, still under the deadline. So there's a comment there from PIR that I wanted to call everyone's attention to in particular. I'd like to do just sort of some administrative stuff, first of all, before we hear from on a status report from the folks who are working on issues reports. And then we need to talk about our report and where we stand on the report. So first and foremost, I want to just reach some clarity on what is going to happen with the report and its transmittal to the council for discussion on Thursday. The report is on the agenda at, I would say, roughly, this is showing it following transfers, so it would be roughly an hour into the council meeting, and I do say roughly, on the 20th, and the information, you are all invited to be on the call, and it's possible that questions will be referred to members of the task force. But for the most part, the discussion will be at the council level based on the report that is presented to them. And then the council needs to vote on the WHOIS recommendations and then vote to approve forwarding the report, incorporating the WHOIS implementation committee report to the ICANN board. The status of the report right now is that, and either I need to or Thomas, I was prepared to do this, to go through, I pulled the additional comments and I had started doing just a summary of each of the comments that was received.
How far into that work are you?
I had just really started on it.
How many comments do we have?
We have 13, I think, 13 or 14.
I think I can do that tonight.
That would be terrific, if you don't mind doing that. Although I'm happy to do some of them, so why don't you and I talk offline and we can do that. Then I'm going to do a transmittal letter, which I'm going to do next so I can get it out to everyone. And the transmittal letter is going to, as I said, describe what the final report is and that there will be three issues reports and what the issues, the topics of the issues reports, and clarify a couple of points that seem to be miscommunications with the two government groups that have made contributions. Just that the noting that the issues report is where further work will be recommended on searchability and uniformity of data elements.
I think we will also have to add Ruchika's dissenting opinion. My proposal would be to put this into the same section as any impact reviews. I don't think we have any so far, except if they are on the comment side. So we can basically make something like constituency statements. That section would then at least contain Ruchika's dissenting opinion. I hope that the ALAC will arrive at adopting an impact review. We have a draft, but it needs to be seen and consented to by all the people there, and I suppose that Denise is working on that. So that would hopefully be able to go in time. And, well, I don't know, do we have anything from any constituencies who want to add their impact reviews?
We have an impact statement that I haven't seen yet from back from Troy, and I'll check with him and see if I'm actually going to get something. I need, though, to ask a question. Ruchika's comment is titled, "Who is Task Force Final Report? Dissenting Opinion from a Non-Commercial Constituency Representative." Is this presented, Ruchika, as the non-commercial constituency's dissenting opinion, or as your dissenting opinion as a representative to the task force?
It's a dissenting opinion as a representative to the task force.
Okay, then it needs to be labeled as such, Thomas, and so it's not actually a comment from the constituency.
So you just put it in like we put in the comments from Thomas and Abel last time when we had the dissenting opinion?
It's too long for that.
Well, could you do just a quick sentence and then send them out to read it somewhere else? Or because your guys' was so clean.
I think what Abel and I did was something like one paragraph and some individual points, but I think Ruchika's comment is more fundamental in nature and taking more fundamental points. So I suppose we should just put it into some subsection with an appropriate headline. I think we will
actually,
be able
Thomas,
to figure that out.
Thomas, I think it needs to go under Roman 5, other input.
Okay, good idea.
Because the chapter says received outside the usual comment process, and then it can have a description of what it is.
Ruchika, is it okay with you?
Can I think about that and email you all?
Actually, no, Ruchika. I want to discuss it with feedback from the full task force who just saw it. So I think we need to hear from other people any comments or questions they have about the submission.
Okay. Well, can you explain again, Marilyn, why it would fit under other input?
Well, it's not a impact. I had assumed you were speaking on behalf of your constituency, but
it's kind of both, right? I am representing the constituency, but I'm
no.
Why couldn't it be?
No. Constituency statements have to be approved by the constituency.
Okay.
And so, if you want to say you're speaking on behalf of the constituency. And because it's been reviewed with your constituency, then that's fine, and then we'll entitle it that and note that this is the view of the constituency. But if it's an individual's viewpoint, which is still an important viewpoint, but it is an individual's viewpoint, then it has to be factually described. Otherwise, we find ourselves in a situation where others in the constituency complain to us that they haven't had a chance to comment on it.
Okay.
So I was trying to understand which it is.
So, Ruchika, was it approved by the non-commercial constituency or not? Because if it was not, then it's your opinion.
It hasn't been. I've only talked to the non-commercial constituency in the sense of just a report that this is what I submitted.
Well,
I would suggest
I
that you have that approved or put it in as your own personal.
That's what I was thinking myself. Marilyn, will I have a chance to email the non-commercial constituency and ask them for approval?
Well, you've got a timing problem. I think, you know, there's two things. I think you want to get your opinion in one way or the other.
Right.
But you do have a timing problem. I think you should look at the document and think about the key point I think you're trying to make is that you are opposing you're making a statement that the task force has failed to adequately address privacy issues and that the task force report is not reflecting the suggestion. I think the one thing to be aware of is that the task force did discuss privacy and how to address privacy several times, and the non-commercial constituency was represented throughout. And the decision of the task force was to treat privacy very seriously and to undertake a separate effort to address it. So, you know, we need to make sure that we include your dissenting opinion as a task force member, and that might be. I'm sorry, Thomas. Let me finish, and then let me ask everyone's opinion. But it might be better to include your comments as a dissenting opinion as a task force member, which, as an individual, then you know you're perfectly. Any individual task force member can express a dissenting opinion.
My proposal would be not to put thinking about it. We should not put it under other input because it's not input received from a third party, but from within the task force. I think it would be most appropriate to put just make a last chapter dissenting opinion and to include Ruchika's dissenting opinion there. I can put in a headline which says dissenting opinion by Ruchika Agrawal, task force representative of the non-commercial constituency. I can very easily change that until the last minute into dissenting opinion submitted on behalf of the non-commercial constituency if there is some kind of formal agreement.
Okay,
I think that would be very easy to do, and
yeah.
I hope that everybody can.
Marilyn, this is Christy. My only concern is that this dissenting opinion should appear close to exactly the same way that we show and had our other dissenting opinions appear in our last report.
Well, we have two things about that. First of all, the other dissenting opinions we had in the last report were about very, very specific points. So these were just interjections about details, and I think it was quite appropriate to have them in those places. This one is a dissenting opinion about the design of the task force's work, and well, you can of course put it under the introduction and say, and format it that way. But I don't think that would be very productive. I think it's better to just explicitly make clear here is a dissenting opinion on which covers basically the design of this report, to mark it very clearly, and to make it in a way so possible
okay.
editorial changes can be.
It's okay. It sounds like you heard me, Thomas.
We're
all good.
I think you're doing perfect.
Thank you.
I'm not trying to give them more weight than the earlier ones or anything like that, but I think the old approach doesn't make sense.
Guys,
perfect.
The suggestion of putting in as a dissenting opinion is consistent with the last paragraph of Ruchika's contribution. However, I am, as a co-chair, I am disappointed to see this emerging at this time.
So am I.
Me too.
Me too.
Me too. Yeah, and me too. I'm sorry,
Ken, don't you think it might confuse our readers if we have this, if we put this in this report, we've got these other issue reports where we are addressing privacy or how, and we even address privacy in this report. But, I mean, how does that confuse our readers if they think...
This is a consensus process, and part of the consensus process is to include any dissent which was voiced.
Guys, we will include the dissent, and let me take a cut at the transmittal letter in explaining that privacy is being addressed in at least two of the issues reports, one of which is to actually focus on how privacy should be addressed. So that is how I propose we handle making sure that the contribution is fully included. But noting in the transmittal an explanation of how privacy is being addressed. We have also this more recent PIR contribution, and I think that it's not fair to the task force to portray that the task force has not taken privacy seriously. It's not fair to the task force to portray that we have not discussed it.
Of the task force?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I did not read the PRR contribution, so I may just be misunderstanding you. But you're saying it's not fair of the task force to portray something, I think.
No, I said it's not fair to the task force.
Ah, okay. Sorry, I just mishear you.
Sorry.
Yeah, but it's also not fair to our readers, because we confuse them by saying, here's our dissenting opinion, and yet in all these other reports, we've obviously fulfilled all those obligations that our dissenting opinion person feels like we haven't even attempted.
That confuses
me. I don't want someone to see our first report and say, oh, well, we don't see privacy here because they just didn't deal with it. Well, that's not true.
I agree with Christy. I'm not at ease at all with, and I would say I have difficulties also to understand the message of Ruchika, because we discussed this issue a lot already, and if there is a dissenting opinion, it must be treated, therefore, as any other dissenting opinion.
I agree.
Okay,
can we get some kind of cue, Marilyn, so we can all make some comments
on this? Let me take a cue, but I want to make a proposal of how to address this, okay, and ask you guys to comment on our goal as a task force is to work constructively and openly and in a trustworthy manner with each other. And that's the only way that we can actually do the work of a task force. And
yeah, but one thing is to have a dissenting opinion, and another is to come up with an opinion which says you haven't done your job.
I hear okay. you. Let me make a proposal here, okay? Here's my proposal. I'm going to take a cut at a transmittal letter. And in the transmittal letter, I will explain, and it seems to me that a couple of things. The task force members who are speaking right now feel that the dissenting opinion does not factually portray the work that has gone on within the task force on this particular issue. And that I will convey that in the transmittal letter. I also will convey in the transmittal letter that the task force takes the issue of privacy seriously, and because of that has undertaken to develop a issues report on privacy. At this point, given the importance of privacy, I think what we're going to propose is that Tony and I will join Machika in the development of the issues report so that we can have something to present to the task force next Tuesday and try to get something to you in writing before that. Tuesday is going to be after the vote of the council on the present stage of the work of the task force. So what I'd like to do is take a cue on if I can craft a transmittal letter for everyone to review that can capture the issues, the work of the task force, included in the work of the task force that you're being asked to vote on is this. Included in the report is a dissenting opinion. The majority of the task force does not agree with the portrayal of the task force's attitude toward privacy. And give that to you guys to look at and do it in a way that is supported by everyone, including Machika. Because what I'd like to put forward to the council is something that the full task force can support, even if we as an individual dissent with a particular recommendation. For instance, Machika's contribution does not address in any way any support for the rest of the task force work. The PIR contribution, by contrast, does, although it disagrees with some of the work, does support the recommendation related to bulk access. And I think, one thing, Machika, that you could think about is whether you can express your support broadly for the work of the task force, including the issues report, so that it doesn't look like you're objecting to all of the work of the task force, unless you are, in which case that should be factually conveyed.
No, in fact,
Marilyn, could I step in for a moment?
Yeah, would you put me in the
queue,
please?
There's a statement in Ruchika's message which says, for this reason, the report cannot fairly be described as a consensus position. We haven't taken a consensus on privacy. The consensus refers to accuracy and bulk access, that's all. What are we talking about here?
Okay, let me take a quick cue and hear from others.
You also put me in the queue, Marilyn. This is Ron.
Steve, could I go to the queue, please?
Tony, Ken, Ron, Steve.
Christy.
Okay, I've said my piece. Next.
Ken?
Yeah, first of all, Ruchika, what I'm going to say, I don't want you to take personally because I don't mean it that way, but you are representing the constituency in the task force. At the same point in time, I have to assume, just like I am, that whatever information you've accumulated over the proceedings has you've used an outreach to communicate on a regular basis with your task force, and any votes and any opinions that have been expressed up until now basically in crafting these documents, I would assume that were communicated by you, were communicated after consultation with your constituency. I have approximately 100 members in my constituency, and I have people who don't always see eye to eye on whether the task force is. As a matter of fact, Tucows has posted out a comment. I, as an individual, I don't really believe that you have the right to post whatever we're calling a dissenting opinion with the same status that your constituency does. Just like I don't believe that Ross Rader and Tucows, or for that matter at this point in time, even PIR, has the right to post it as a dissenting opinion. It isn't really an opinion. It's a position that you as an individual have taken on the report. It is not a position that your constituency has taken. Just like Ross's opinions or Tucows' opinions on the report do not represent the considered position of the constituency. If I'm wrong, please tell me so. If I'm right, then I don't honestly believe you deserve the status of a dissenting opinion, unless my interpretation of what constitutes a dissenting opinion is way off base. As I said before, I've had to take positions to this committee that I don't agree on that have been registrar positions, but I've had to fulfill my obligation to the registrars to represent them in a considered basis before the committee. Thanks. I'm sorry to... That's just the way I feel.
Let's just keep hearing some people, and then we'll come back and try to problem solve.
Can you put me into the queue, please? Thomas here.
Sure. I'm away from my queue. I think Ron was next.
Thanks. I had really a question. I wanted to clarify a statement that Ruchika had made. I quote here, "Furthermore, a number of comments submitted to the WHOIS Task Force's recommendations report raise privacy and data misuse issues that the WHOIS Task Force has effectively ignored." I wanted to understand the basis of that statement, because the record that I have shows that the WHOIS Task Force has not ignored the issues, but has made a clear choice as to what it should do with these issues. So I really have it's a request for clarification of this, what I think is a pretty strong statement that says that the task force has ignored opinions that have come in from the community.
Should I answer, or do you want to keep going, Marilyn?
Well, why don't we go through the queue, and then we'll come back and see if we can address the question in a problem-solving way. Steve?
Yes, Marilyn, in response to your proposal, I of course would be glad to take a look at anything you prepare on in a transmittal, but I think rather than get into a back and forth about what a majority of the task force thinks about Ruchika's contribution, I think all we could really say at this point is that because it came in so late, this is one of the problems with a contribution like this coming in not at the 11th hour, but really at the 13th hour. This report is already done. It's final. And therefore, we can't really respond to it now. We may have to do so at a later time. We can say we don't agree with it, but I wouldn't get into whether it's factually accurate or not. It's just too late for us to respond to, quite frankly. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Christy?
I guess I'm just a little bit confused about the initiative that Ruchika was supposed to be taking with concern to privacy. I thought that Ruchika was asked to generate a list of the privacy concerns that our task force had been able to collect over the last year. And so I guess I'm just a little confused about what Ruchika's goal is. If she wanted just to work on the privacy issue and how we're going to try to write policy to make things more private for our constituents, perhaps she should have agreed to join the Team 2 and Team 3 effort to work on this. And if she would like to,
we've already got the tasks out assigned, but we can always use editors. So I guess I'm just a little bit confused about what it is exactly that Ruchika is doing. And if the concern is just to try to get some policy written for privacy, why she did not agree to join our working group.
Okay, that's clear. Thomas?
I would like to get back to Ken's point. Ken was talking about positions from constituencies and about the role of constituency representatives on task forces. And I think he was making the assumption that the dissenting opinion we have on the table is, well, exclusively Ruchika's only opinion. And actually, Ruchika, this is a question to you. Is this something which is exclusively your personal opinion, or is it something which you believe to mirror majority feelings and thoughts of the constituency? Because, I mean, there is always a difference between an adopted opinion and a representative doing his job of finding out what a constituency thinks and of conveying that. Both things are legitimate. Both things are different, and both adopted positions and representatives conveying of opinions are very distinct from just a personal opinion. So, Ruchika, maybe you want to elaborate a little bit on that.
Well, Thomas, hold on just a minute. Let me just, I think that asking Ruchika to comment on some of these questions will be helpful, but let me just make something clear. Right now, the contribution is labeled dissenting opinion from a non-commercial constituency representative. I believe that Ruchika has clarified that at this point, this is a individual contribution from her as a member of the task force. So that would mean that at this point, that is the standing that this has. And
well, actually, it's published in the comments on the ICANN website.
It is, but it's labeled dissenting opinion from a non-commercial constituency.
And it's also an ICANN watch.
Yep. Yeah, let me ask the Chica to.
So much for cooperation and teamwork.
Wait a minute. I'm frustrated too, but I think from a practical standpoint, I've fought some pretty big battles with the non-commercial people, but I honestly believe that the way that it was worded, that there wasn't any intent there other than to try to present what she felt was a position that she had on it, and I don't think she tried necessarily, even in her comments today, and I apologize for speaking about you in the third person, Ruchika. I don't think there was any attempt to try to torpedo or anything like this. I'm frustrated about the timing. I'm just primarily concerned about I have the same issue again with Ross Rader and Tukaus, but as far as I'm concerned, that's their personal opinion.
And Ross isn't on this task force.
Yes,
Ross,
but that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether Ross is on the task force or not. Ross is the presenting an opinion. Whether your status as a member of the task force really has, in my opinion, little to do with the fact that Ruchika has an obligation to bring to the task force the perspective of the constituency. That is not necessarily always her perspective. And if what she is presenting is her perspective, it needs to be identified as her perspective, not necessarily in her capacity. And I think we have to separate the capacity. You know, I mean, I'm a names council rep. I don't put that down. I'm a member of a task force, or I have an opinion. That's the point I'm saying.
And I think at least the two of us are basically in violent agreement, and that was precisely the reason why I was trying to ask Ruchika to clarify if this was just her personal opinion or her observation of the constituency.
And frankly, I think many of us agree with some of the concepts that Ruchika has brought up in her at the conceptual level. I'm not sure I agree with some of the specifics, but, you know, I think all of us have agreed in our prior conversations that privacy is an important issue and, you know, cannot be ignored. I think, in fact, what we've said is that privacy is is larger than just who is.
So
well, in the big report we prepared for Bucharest, as I remember, Thomas Roessler included pie charts which referred to privacy concerns.
Correct.
We're all in violent agreement
that privacy is of concern. I think what Rashika might do, without us grilling her too much here, is to answer a couple of these questions and then for us to figure out how to go forward, because we are going to have a vote on this report. We have a bit more work to do between now and then. I need your attention to a transmittal letter, which I will work on and try to get out yet this afternoon. And I want to talk a little bit about, we have until the 20th of March to come to, excuse me, we don't even have until then. We have until roughly the 4th or 5th of March to get our issues reports out and to make them the caliber that they need to be. And I am not satisfied with one of them. And for that reason, Tony and I are making a change in how that one's going to be handled.
I haven't seen any draft so far, quite frankly.
Sure you have. You saw one for searchability last December.
Ah, yes, okay. Definitely.
And you
I revised it.
Okay.
I don't have anything more recent than that.
So, back to Rashika, you can pick and choose on what you want to respond to here, but you've got a couple of questions that it probably would be helpful for the group and the working relationships for you to respond to.
Right. So my first step forward will be to check back with my constituency and see if they approve of my dissenting opinion. And I think that'll take care of Ken's and Tom's and Thomas's questions. Is that fair?
Well, that means the answer is no. This is only a personal opinion. You did not get approval from your constituency members prior to posting.
I'm sorry, they can't say that, yes, we agree that this is a representative view of the non-commercial constituency?
Well, they certainly can, Rashika, but most of us, in working with our constituency, take a different approach than mailing them something and say, will you endorse my personal opinion? But they certainly can just say, we agree with you, but, you know, this will be done without the context of the rest of the work that has gone on within this task force in that case.
And I will make it clear, Marilyn, on that note, that I don't oppose the rest of the work. I'm not in opposition to the bulk access recommendations. Ideally what I'd like to see is language in there that says, and I made it clear in my opinion, that I'm not against accurate data per se. I just would like to see language that says, well, that handling privacy issues should be concurrent, at least, with enforcing accuracy.
I don't think anyone disagrees with you, Rashika. I think that we all made that decision when we split up into four groups. We made this decision last August or September that we could only move forward by separating each idea into its own entity, and privacy was proven to be such a big deal that we have to allow for everyone to participate, which means that we need to get all our ducks in a row before we, you know, go out there and try to do something really big with it. And we made these decisions, you know, last year. And it's everyone's available to consult with you if you have questions about what has and what has not happened.
And just to be fair, your constituency was fully represented.
Very well represented.
So, you know, I think the point number one, yeah, I think you should go consult with your constituency, which we've been assuming you've been doing on an ongoing basis, and I would ask that you really try to be as fair to the rest of the task force as possible.
That's fair enough.
So one of the things that I think Ram's question to you is a very fair question that it would be helpful for you to respond to.
Can you repeat the question, Marilyn?
Let me ask Ram to do that.
Sure. The question, Rashika, was in your email, you had said that, furthermore, a number of comments submitted to the WHOIS Task Force's recommendations report raise privacy and data misuse issues that the WHO's task force is effectively ignored. And I was looking back, you know, after I saw your email yesterday, I went and looked at the record, and to me, the record shows that the task force has not ignored these various issues and has made a clear choice as to what to do about it. So I wanted to understand, what was your basis for making the statement that the WHO's task force has ignored comments from, you know, various individuals and organizations?
Okay, so if you read through the postings that I've listed, that I bulleted under that comment, they're all questioning the task force's recommendation on accuracy. And they're all basically saying the same thing that I said. Why are we moving forward with accuracy when we haven't addressed privacy?
And so all of those...
We haven't come up with recommendations on privacy safeguards. We're just saying we're going to discuss this issue further by way of a privacy issues report that's effectively...
And does that mean that it's ignored, Ruchika? Or does that mean that it's a decision made? I guess that's my distinction. That's what I'm focused on. When you say that something is ignored, that means that no consideration is given to it whatsoever. It's not discussed.
Well,
I don't. That's what happened here.
Well, did we respond to each of these comments that I bulleted?
Ruchika, we discussed this previously in depth, and I think maybe the distinction here might be the difference between the term ignored versus that the task force had a difference of opinion with you on how to address privacy. That's different than ignoring, it seems to me, and maybe that's the distinction, that the task force is saying, we read them all, we considered them, we discussed them, we at one point in time, in the roughly August-September time frame, made a very clear decision that we could not even address all of the questions related to accuracy or bulk access and marketing. At one point, we had lumped together bulk access and marketing uses of the data. We made the decision to divide the work because we felt the need to engage in much more discussion on some of the topics, but we could move ahead with some recommendations that there was support in the community for. And that doesn't mean that we ignore input. It means that we made a decision on a different approach to deal with it.
Can I speak, Marilyn?
Please.
In addition to what you've just said, Ruchika, some comments have the nature of an imposition, not a comment or a suggestion. And if we were to go exactly by these comments, which you have referenced in your comment, well, Danny Younger says we should be dissolved as a task force, so we wouldn't be discussing this today with you, okay?
Let's move past this, because I think what I'm trying to figure out is what is a outcome that is going to support the task force as a group putting forward a recommendation. I'm sorry, we have a recommendation. That's not quite, and I think Steve helped to crystallize this. This is a final report. And it was a final report at the point it was put out for comments, but we need to incorporate the comments we've received, which are about the final report. So my suggestion is we will incorporate at present the Chica's comment as a dissenting opinion as a task force member. If it turns out to be a constituency statement, then that can be modified when the either at the time that the council votes on this, or at the time, depending on the outcome at the council, at the time that it's forwarded to the board for consideration, showing that it is a constituency statement. What I need to focus on right now is I'm going to do a letter transmittal, and you guys can all look at it, and Ruchika will go back and consult with her constituency members about whether this is a... But again, any member of a task force has the right to submit a dissenting opinion as an individual. So that's a given, and we're just going to move past that. I think the concern that Ritika has heard by members of the task force is that there's a disagreement broadly by those members who have spoken about the characterization of the task force, and that that is an unfortunate and regrettable mischaracterization on my part. What I'm going to do now is to tell people that the changes you're going to get, Thomas and I will figure out who's going to summarize which of these comments so we can get them done quickly, and then I'm going to write a letter of transmittal, and I am going to ask the help of each of the folks, if you can stay on for 10 more minutes. Christy, you and Rom have a call at 2 today?
Yes.
I will join you for as much of that as I can.
It should be a very short call.
Okay.
Good.
And Steve, what can we do to support you in the issues report you're working on?
Uh-oh.
I've lost Steve. I will call him offline and see where that stands. And particularly what I'd like to do, do you have something that summarizes the work you've put together on the gathering the questions on privacy issues so far?
Well, my dissenting opinion includes a list of questions that have come up. I think PIR's letter raises privacy issues also. My stance on this right now, Marilyn, is that, as I've expressed already, is that I do oppose moving forward with accuracy until we've addressed privacy, because you see they're very closely tied. And
you're on the record at that. However, the task force has made a decision that we will have an issues report on privacy. So, you know, I recognize that you have a dissenting opinion about the final report on accuracy and bulk access, but the task force has a broader responsibility, and individuals who volunteer to be on it volunteer to do work, and we all count on each other. So we have to do what we've committed to do. I can't envision publishing a statement that says the task force has decided to renege on its commitment to issue a issues report on privacy. I think that would be bad for all of us, given how much work and how much commitment we've already put into this.
Okay. Then, Marilyn, I'm going to respectfully decline from doing the privacy issues report, and I think you could use my letter and PIR's letter as a basis for work on that.
Okay. That will be one of the contributions. I would hope you would reconsider working with Tony and me on developing the issues report and making a contribution to it, but I think that all of us feel committed to having privacy work go forward. And here would be the risk for all of us. Let's just say that option, that scenario one, is that the vote happens and the council sends forward the final report to the board with these relatively minor changes, by the way, in policy. And the council then, of course, is awaiting these three issues reports in March. And as a part of that decision, the council decides whether or not to launch further work. Is it your constituency's goal to have further work on privacy launched by the council or not?
I mean, our goal, as far as I can understand it, is to have these issues dealt with before we move forward with other decisions that seriously implicate it.
But here's the problem. If you don't contribute to identifying the privacy issues and the this report, which is relatively minor in its impact on privacy overall compared to the rest of the work, if you don't contribute to the work, then I think you run the risk of your constituency not being represented in helping to define what the problem is.
I think that's the stance I'm taking, Marilyn, because
it's basically
just stated in my dissenting opinion.
Okay, then we'll respect that, and we will note that after providing. Can you send to Tony and to me then any questions that you received, mine as well, from any contributions you've received?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
I would like to have Marilyn.
Uh-huh.
I would like this this declination to be put in writing. The fact that the non-commercial constituency representative has been invited to participate in this issues report and has declined. We should have that in writing.
Just do it in an email to us, Vachika, and because I think we still want to be sure that we have your comments on the issues report and your participation on the issues report. But I understand that given the firmly held position that you don't want the initial work to go forward, that you feel it's necessary to recuse yourself at this stage.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Yeah, and we can
just so that we know on the record that this happened.
Sure.
And nothing is thrown at us a month later that, you know, they
sure.
had no opportunity to participate.
That's
the only thing I'm asking.
Let's just do this as an email to you and me so we don't need to feed the ICANN watch machine. Well, I'm always interested in headlines. It's never my goal to see my name in that headline.
Well,
I really appreciate
I'm frankly
comment,
disappointed
Tony.
Now because, first of all, I'm sorry that Rajika is elected to step out at this point in time. Over the years, I've seen an awful lot of knockdown, dragout battles with significantly more angst in them than has been expressed today, and we've always tried to stay in the arena and see if we could work things out. By stepping out of the arena, even though you have a position, what you're telling us is that your position is not only your position, but the non-commercial constituency's position, that for all intents and purposes, there is an intent not to participate at this point in time and moving forward. And
Wait. Let's let you clarify. I think what she was suggesting, as I took it, and Vachika can comment, I think what she was suggesting is she just thought she shouldn't continue to lead in the development of an issues report because of the position she had taken on behalf of potentially her constituency, that there shouldn't be a decoupling of privacy and accuracy. So I wasn't thinking you were completely stepping aside, but that you were just suggesting you shouldn't lead in the development of the issues report.
That's a fair characterization, Madeline.
So Ken, I don't think
okay.
we're...
Yeah. I'm sorry, I apologize, but it gets a little frustrating sometimes because it's hard to read into the... You read a lot of what somebody says into whether or not that's what they're saying or what they mean. Now,
I agree with you, Ken. I thought that she fully declined to participate in the task force at all.
Yeah, that's what troubled me more than anything else.
Unfortunately, we can't possibly...
I'm going to have to leave, folks.
Yeah,
I need
thanks.
To go. I'm sorry,
yes.
guys. I've got a meeting at 15.
Okay. Rom, you had asked me to respond to what I was going to say on the FCC panel?
Yes.
Why don't I send an email to people having to leave? I think Vachika and I are both on that panel, and I'll send an email around to people. While I'm participating as an individual, I am going to reference the status of the work of the task force, but just refer people to where the documents are, et cetera. And then
I think that's an important distinction to make also that, you know, I know, Rajika, you're going to be on it as well, and you know, if we're going to reference the report, then we should make sure what hat we're wearing or at least indicate what hat we're wearing.
Sure.
Fair point.
Do we still have Glenn and Denise here?
Yes, Glenn, yeah.
Denise, are you still there?
Glenn.
Denise.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes.
Okay. I had hoped that Denise Michel was still on the call, but she isn't. I was just trying to figure out what's our editorial timeline for getting the very final version of the report.
Well, Thomas, actually, I think I might be able to help you with this particular question. Here would be my view. The ALAC is Denise still on?
This was what I was asking.
Oh, sorry. The ALAC is an advisory committee to the council.
Yes.
And is participating in the task forces, and in the future will have appointed representatives. But, you know, I know that's been, you guys have been just getting up and running. My suggestion to you and Denise is that as an advisory committee, just like the Security and Advisory Committee to Council, anything that you could provide to us, we will welcome as a task force. But I would expect us to also append anything that you contribute to the report in entirety.
Yes. What the thing we are working on, quite frankly, mostly I was working on, is framed in the format of an impact review, looking at the recommendations and looking at their possible impact on individual users. So what I would expect was to add it to that section of the report, and what I was trying to figure out at this point is by what timeline we need to get it adopted.
Okay.
So I can cut and paste it in.
Sure. I think
if you agree to the basic notion of having
I'm trying to give you as much time as possible.
It seems to me
that since you are a advisory committee and your report will have to be appended in entirety to the transmittal from the council to the board.
We may have more time. Okay.
Yes.
Well, so let me put it like this. I think that from my personal point of view, I would prefer to put it in just as an impact review. So the question is, until when can we get that done? When do I have to, if we can get it that way, I think it should be fine with everybody. And if we can't, we still can look for alternative ways.
Can you get it in by close of business Wednesday night so that we're able to say we've received it by the 9 a.m. Meeting?
Yes, I think so. I very much hope so.
Okay.
I'm sitting on the formatting anyway, so it's just a question whether or not I include it by that time.
Well, but Thomas, but I think that, you know, work this out with Denise, but Denise should be on the call on behalf of on the council call, and Denise could say an impact report is has been developed and is being approved, but won't be, so that if it needs to be appended.
Yeah. Marilyn, I'm just really trying to understand the constraints.
Right.
Just trying to get coordinates ready in order to do.
I know, and we're all working a little bit, you know, with new. We still have to.
So the second question is, by what time should I consider the report closed as far as, say, an impact review from the business constituency is concerned?
Well, I'm going to call Troy right now because I had asked him to draft something, and I will see whether or not we actually are going to have anything. It'll be short if he's been able to do something. We only have impact review statements from. We actually don't have impact review statements from any of the other constituencies.
We're preparing ours. The ASP will send shortly.
Can you send it to me directly, please, to make sure I can include it?
Tony, is it? And you'll. When do you expect to have it?
What's the deadline?
We're just trying to figure that out.
Oh well, we thought it was, you know, close of business today, but that doesn't seem to be practical. Could it be by noon Wednesday, which would be 6 p.m. Thomas's time?
I don't know. I doubt it because we've only just recovered our chairman from his travels.
Okay.
But we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
An impact
report from the constituency on the latest report, right?
Yeah,
but remember that unlike deletes, this particular work of the WHOIS task force has not been able to fully adopt the policy development process.
Yeah. All these acronyms.
Yeah, so if you don't have a impact statement, but you have a statement of support for the report or something of that nature that you want appended, you can also submit that.
Okay.
Can
we make it very enthusiastic and supportive, or won't that look
good? you can say anything your constituency will agree to support. That's the measurement. Okay.
So I have to go and lobby people then, huh?
Yeah.
I'll get formal approvement, please.
Hey, Thomas, I think what I... Can I divide these up with you?
Which ones?
The submissions.
The comments?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at them, so I'm hardly able to divide them up, but if...
Your call
tonight is very short. I won't have any problem doing all, I think. I can just type them in the right kind of format and everything. That will speed up things. Otherwise, I will lose time by formatting things.
I'm happy to have you do them, but I want to review both PIR and TCALS with you because both of them are, I think, PIR is... I have a couple of problems with how late things are, but they are where they are. The PIR is a little confused. It is it's lobbying on behalf of its views about the way that individuals should be treated versus the way that organizations should be treated, and it's not, you know, I'm not saying that's not a fair thing to comment on, but it's very hard to pull out what PIR's agenda is, other than trying to lobby for particular points of view that it has. And again, I think we need to try to summarize on behalf of our readers what is directly relevant to this report versus what is relevant to future work. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where the council is going to throw its hands up and think that no further work on WHOIS should be done, or that the council itself doesn't, and that we don't ourselves understand the issues related to WHOIS. So why don't you...
I will review... Marilyn, you're going to be on Ram's call tonight, right?
Yes.
In the beginning.
Yeah.
So am I. So give me the time until then to have a first look at the comments, and then we can use that call to discuss it further. It's
perfect.
In 45 minutes anyway.
Perfect. Bye.
I think it's on TV.
Right.
Marilyn, one...
Yes.
Just for your information, a very brief briefing about what will be in the ALEC statement. It will be, in the beginning, it will be saying, okay, here's our impact review. We're putting things into broader context a little bit, and we'll then go through individual recommendations, looking at what does it mean to registrants, where does it focus on registrants, how do we read these, and on bike access, we will raise some concerns about enforceability. On accuracy, we will note that in an environment where registrants perceive inaccurate data to be a tool to achieve privacy, accuracy recommendations will shift a balance on the practical balance of privacy, even if policy isn't changed. And changes of enforcement will change the existing balance. This shift of balance is a concern, so we perceive all these recommendations as first steps towards a future environment, and hope that the future environment will cover this and this and this, and are ready to participate in any discussions. I forgot one thing in the introductory paragraph. There is a sentence which acknowledges that the task force is producing issues reports and expresses the committee's hope that the impact review may be helpful in that work too, something like that. So that's roughly what to expect from us.
Thomas, that is a extremely informed set of comments on the work of the task force. And that would say to me that that has to be supported by the ALAC members, that the ALAC members would have to be able to support this level of detail.
I hope, Marilyn, the support of the ALAC, the question is just, can everybody be reached in time?
Well, no, I'm making a different point to you. I think that you might want to think about taking it up a little bit higher level. Then, I mean, what you just ran through to me sounds like it portrays, can everyone be reached in time, but can't you have an in-depth conversation with everyone in time? Because, I want to be sure that the contribution of the at-large, in particular because, to some extent, this is a new organization proving itself to the council, that it has processes in place that...
it has what in place, please?
Processes.
Okay.
So just think about whether it's important to be as detailed as you are versus whether there's a way to get agreement by the ALAC that to key principles and mostly to make sure that the ALAC can participate in the next stages of even developing the issues reports or commenting on the issues reports as they're published, which I think is going to be very important for you guys.
So you're telling me that you would propose to make it much more high level? What we are doing, or what I'm doing in the report right now, is to really go through the recommendations in the final report and only through these, analyze them, look at them, what do they mean, what do they mean in context, and derive some requirements for further work from this.
Okay, but here's my feedback to you, and I share this only because I live this on a daily basis in trying to, on every policy issue that I try to explain to my business unit people inside my company, okay, which is just an analogy, or where I try to explain the impact of a recommendation to a BC member who doesn't follow it to the level of detail that we do, this is an hour to a two-hour conversation in detail to explain something as detailed as you were kind of referencing. You have a very in-depth understanding of the report. My question to you was... just think about how feasible it is to get buy-in if you have to reach everybody and sell it at a deep level of understanding. That was my point. You have to make that decision with Denise because the two of you are the people who have to be able to explain it. The bigger issue to me, I will tell you, besides your comments on this, the bigger issue to me is making sure that as the issues reports are put out for comment, that the ALAC is prepared to comment early in the process of having the issues reports so that they can come into the meeting in Rio feeling like they have a good understanding of what the issues reports say and what their support for the council's further work would be. I think there is a real risk at the council in Rio that people will not have the needed commitment to dedicate the resources to the next stage of policy work.
Yeah. That would be very bad.
You got it.
So one more reason to say we are there, we are understanding it.
Yes.
And to make sure that we are.
Yes. Let me let you go. I'll talk to you in 45 minutes.
Makes it 40.
Okay. Bye.